Welcome to the Altus Group podcast series. Today, Ross Litkenhaus, Vice President Strategic Development at Altus Group, is interviewing Jair Lynch, President and CEO of Jair Lynch Real Estate Partners, about how entitlements affect the long-term viability of submarkets and much more. And with that, we'll hand it over to Ross.
Thanks, Matt. Jair, thanks for joining us today. I appreciate it. So it's been a few months now since you and I initially ran into each other again. I've known each other for quite some time, but ran each other again at the ICSC, Mid-Atlantic Conference. And as you know, I've been out in Tysons for quite some time, working in the D.C. area, but am a big proponent of the Tysons market. I've done a lot of work out here from a property tax perspective, but certainly long on the market as a whole. And in our conversation, talking about general submarkets, you took kind of a hard line in terms of not being quite as optimistic on the Tysons market, and we got to talking about FAR, entitlements, the comprehensive plan, and thought it would be really interesting for our listeners and frankly for me to kind of drill down on that and your thoughts on it, because you've been developing in the DC market for quite some time and been very, very smart about the submarkets specifically in locations that you've targeted. And I know that in addition to some of the basic supply-demand fundamentals, you're also really keen on tracking entitlements and how that affects, really the long-term viability of certain submarkets. So, from your perspective, for me and for our listeners, what makes those entitlements and the impact of them so important in your mind?
Well, thanks a lot for bringing me on the program. I will start by saying we've been in business for almost 20 years, thinking about walkable urban places, thinking about downtown adjacent places and how they mature over time. But that really was born from an urban design background that would look at not only blocks, not only neighborhoods, not only cities, but regions in general. And, growing up in Washington, D.C., and really believing in this region, I really always start with a top line, a view of what's happening in the market. What are the things that we're doing that are helping the whole market mature? And what are the things that are actually the short strokes that actually may make create some stumbling blocks? So, I mean, you have to go back from an urban design perspective and look, 20, 30, 40 years ago, the initial investments in metro, the initial investments in mass transit in general that has created some of the great corridors in Virginia and Washington, D.C., the RV corridor in Virginia, the 14th Street corridor in Washington, D.C. I always remind people that the Green Line was the last of the metro lines. And the U Street Metro opened up in around 2000, and we've seen tremendous growth there. Now that we're opening up the Silver Line out in Tysons, there's the opportunity to convert what has been typically a drivable suburban neighborhood into a more walkable urban neighborhood in Tysons. And the handoff from the public investment in infrastructure through the Silver Line and other things has to be a seamless handoff to the planning departments as well as the private sector in terms of what I think creating authentic places. I think when you have the opportunity that you have in Tysons, in the short strokes, you can often provide a tremendous amount of FAR. You can think about the value creation and not think about the streets, not think about the public spaces. And so while I do believe in Tysons long term, I have seen some of the plans out there that make me nervous that we're going to have, it's going to take a while for it to mature over time. And are we going to be happy with the outcomes in terms of the walkability in 10, 20 years? And we have similar challenges in D.C. We have great walkability as it relates to being downtown adjacent, having several downtown adjacent neighborhoods. But they're now thinking about some of the other forms of mobility, whether it's the circulator, whether it's the bike lanes, and thinking about all those things early on, I think is the best way to make sure that you can create great places.
So it seems to me, and I think that this has been widely covered as recently as even the WTOP of all places, who typically doesn't cover a lot of real estate, you know, talking about really the excess FAR that has been released from Fairfax County. And to some extent, I mean, you know, to their credit, they've been very good about approving, pushing through projects with the developers to get as much out of the ground as possible. But that's created some problems. So I'm just like the WTOP, you know, covered in terms of the excess office vacancy. And a lot of that, I think, has really come about as the FAR has been offered by the county and that handoff. A lot of the new buildings have come out of the ground. And what you're left with is any kind of lateral movement or flight to quality to the new buildings has really left a very high volume of some of the, you know, suburban, which you mentioned, Class B aged office product vacant. So it really is kind of messing with that supply-demand fundamental, and I think that really speaks to the fact that what you pointed out, which is, you know, they've offered so much in entitlements and FAR and a lot of new products coming out of the ground, it's leaving this aging, older product on the market vacant, declining in value, and left a lot of folks owning those buildings or folks that are looking to develop some of those older buildings, you know, questioning what is next. So, you know, in terms of kind of the long-term viability of the Tysons market specifically, do you as a developer, you know, see an opportunity at some point in the future to come out and take down some of those older buildings once maybe some of the, you know, the neighborhoods have been established, it's a little more walkable, or is that something that you look at in the near term? And essentially, at what point do you, you know, do you start looking at Tysons as the potential for development? What really has to come into play to make that happen?
Yeah, well, you know, our job is to think through a product, think through the economics, and think through the execution of a project. And what's interesting to me is that the government and other regional bodies have to be a counterparty to that and have the same skill sets in thinking through it. I think the best municipalities are the ones that have a cross-section of their economic development offices, their planning offices, and their CFOs all thinking through what type of public investments need to be made in order to spur economic activity, what are the ramifications of those in one spot versus the other, and what are the opportunities that come out of it. So I definitely think that if there are older products that are out there on the private side, we would by all means be looking to buy, but we would then have to interface to make sure that the new set of entitlements would allow us to develop something that makes sense from an economics perspective. And so we absolutely are looking at various locations in Virginia, in Maryland, in which there's going to be this transition. We were very good in the transition of an urban place in Washington, D.C., and helped that move it to a more viable and more mature status. We think we can do the same in the suburbs, primarily because we recognize this interplay between product, the economics, your entitlements, public investment. And when all of that starts to come together is really when I think you can create a great place.
So give me, I don't want you to give up too much of your secret sauce, and maybe you're not willing to answer this question, but, you know, what submarkets, given the context of everything that you just said, what are the submarkets outside of D.C. That you're really keeping a close eye on as a place that you might want to pounce on here over the next, call it, 3 to 5 years?
Well, if you remember Chris Lineburner's work a couple years ago, that identified walkable urban places. One of the big takeaways from his work was that there were more than 50% of the walkable urban places, regionally significant walkable urban places, were outside of D.C. And it was places like Tysons, but it was also places like Fort Totten, inside the district, like Fort Totten or Silver Spring in Maryland. And all of those places on his list for us make a lot of sense. And it's because they have the fundamentals. They have usually some sort of public infrastructure there. Now, in all cases, it doesn't have to be heavy rail, but some sort of public infrastructure that connects people to jobs and allows people to be within a 30-minute commute of their job centers. It has some sort of commercial base. It has some sort of daytime traffic. And through that, you're able to, I think, just energize those places and move them to the next level.
That's great. One of the areas that I've been following closely and been very involved in, and I think you and I have talked about this maybe briefly, is in the city of Falls Church, which is where I live. We've got a 10-acre site adjacent to the high school up there, really between the high school, wrapped around the high school, and between West Falls Church Metro, that I think is perfectly positioned for exactly what you're talking about. And as a city, we're considering taking that out to RFP to help support the school, help support the bonds that we need to sell to build a new George Mason High School. And so I hope that's an area that that you will follow closely, because I certainly am and have been very involved in that process with the city and as a citizen on the Board of Zoning Appeals there. So I think that's one area. And when you talk about the ability for walkable urban close to rail and transportation, with traffic, with a commercial base, I think that is one of the next great opportunities inside the Beltway, frankly, to build, you know, a walkable, urban, dense, but also with civic engagement and a benefit to the community. I think that site, that 10-acre site, has a ton of potential. Personally,
we agree. We absolutely think that site's great, and we think that the proximity to job centers and downtown and other entertainment is even better. We think that is a great site, and there's a number of those in the region, both on the Maryland and the Virginia side, of which when we have to produce, we're doing. The region is doing well in terms of, you know, job creation, in terms of trying to stay above its 10-year average. And when we do that, we have to make sure that we're making good decisions that are getting the best return on investment for either public and or private dollars in specific locations. So that's why we concentrate our efforts in these walkable urban places, and that's why when we're sitting across from public entities or others that have to make comparable investments, whether it's in transit or schools or other things, that really does spur the private investment to follow.
Sure. Well, let me ask you just a general market question, because you're, you know, a very smart guy. I've done very well in the market. And just in general terms, right, just the Washington, D.C. area, is there anything right now that you're seeing in the market that gives you pause for concern, that maybe we're a little frothy on the multifamily side? And I know this is a very general and almost ambiguous question, but is there anything just in general terms that makes you, your ears kind of perk up and say, you know what, we may be getting close to the peak from a commercial perspective? And maybe it's to a specific asset type, maybe it's a specific submarket. As we know, DC to some extent is shielded from the volatility as long as the federal government keeps leasing and spending money. But is there anything that you're sitting back in the boardroom in your office saying, you know what, it may be time for us to rethink our strategy a little bit for softer times?
Well, I got to tell you, the number one thing that we have on the board that gives us pause in the region is the inability to solve for Metro. To make Metro work. We have to get dedicated funding for Metro. There are several proposals on the table from both sides of the river, from all three jurisdictions. And the clarity on Metro, I think, will continue to attract businesses, continue to attract both millennials and seniors to move to walkable urban places, and it'll allow for the economy to grow. I think as Metro falls apart, we will start blaming other things when a business leaves, or we start seeing millennials leave the district in particular. But if you go down and you really survey each one of those sectors to find out what's going on, I can guarantee you that Metro is probably in the top three things of why they're leaving.
Now, am I right in this, that the federal government doesn't really contribute or contribute at all to the maintenance and kind of the deferred maintenance and the operational and the capital improvements associated with Metro. Am I right in that?
I am not an expert, but the federal government does make contributions to Metro. Some people would argue, isn't an appropriate amount considering the number of employees that they have moving in and out of different areas versus the payments that are made by the local jurisdictions. Some people would say that the 20 million visitors are typically coming to federal monuments, the mall, the museums, et cetera. And so, could there be a more rational funding of different components? But I don't think that we can ask the federal government alone to pick up the bill. I think this region has to commit in a meaningful way towards creating a dedicated funding stream for Metro. And then we will all reap the benefits from that investment, which will be that an economy grows and we continue to have jobs and we have increased population.
Yeah, I mean, I absolutely agree with you. I think that Metro, to some extent, is a lifeblood. And if you do start to see a decline, it absolutely could be blamed on other things. But Metro is a huge component of that. But it become very acute and very difficult from some jurisdictions. And I come back to Falls Church when, the federal government, or I'm sorry, not federal government, when WMATA and operationally and in terms of contributions to that can be quite a burden, in some cases difficult to plan for. When they're asking for money to make these huge repairs, which frankly have been a long time coming. I think that the idea of a plan, to get better visibility and transparency and so folks can budget accordingly, from a jurisdictional standpoint is incredibly important. But herding those cats, getting everybody together, private and public, to make that decision has just been incredibly difficult for some reason. I personally would like to see the federal government contribute more to that. Because I agree, a lot of the tourists, a lot of the traffic daily, folks coming to work at the agencies and downtown, I mean, a lot of that ridership is driven by the federal government. And, I don't know if there's been enough coordination, but again, I'm not an expert in terms of how it's all been done. There are some very, very smart people who've been working very hard to try to solve that problem. But you're absolutely right. If that becomes, part of the crumbling infrastructure of the D.C. area, that is going to impact in a very serious way our ability to create some of these, some of this placemaking that you talk about in terms of walkable environments, that are attractive to the millennials. So I couldn't agree with you more. So, Jair, you're a very busy guy. I appreciate your time and would love to get on one of these podcasts again to dig into some other issues on the commercial real estate side. So thank you very much for your time, and you have a great week. And Matt, I will turn it over to you.
Thanks a lot, Ross. And just heard an exclusive Altus Group podcast interview where Ross Litkenhouse, Vice President Strategic Development at Altus Group, interviewed Jair Lynch, President and CEO of Jair Lynch Real Estate Partners, and they covered a wide range of topics when it comes to real estate in the D.C. metro area. And thank you both for your time today.
Thanks, Matt.